Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Easter versus Passover when we come back. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. It says, "By what way is it that the light is parted?" Or if it was paraphrased, it says, "By what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated?" Now, can you imagine asking a question like that 4,000 years ago? It is, of course, today a simple question to ask and answer. And a student says, well, by passing it through the prism of a spectroscope. But who could have known that 4,000 years ago in Job's time? Now, when we heat a metal red hot, or we heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on a graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star out in interstellar space, we only have to pass that light ray through the spectroscope to see the composition of that star and the proportion of each of its ingredients. And this division of light rays is always constant. It doesn't vary in the least particular. We can always rely upon the results. Spectroscopic analysis is an exact science, and this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. But you know, that places us in a quandary. Either Job knew this, or supernatural wisdom is being revealed here. And this is just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School. For more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send an email request for your free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, the area code 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about Easter and Passover. I received a letter here from a young fella, and I guess it's in Ohio, and he wanted to know, could you email me with the calculation for Passover this year and how you arrive at that particular time? Tricky part is, how do you arrive at that particular time? So in the last program, we narrowed it down to the exact biblical citations that tell us how to calculate the first day of the first month of the new year. And it's not done with a calendar, it's done with the agricultural timekeeping system by using the moon and the temperature of the earth, which causes the barley to start growing in the spring and when the ears start to appear. The very next full moon is the first day of the new year. Now, this Passover is a pretty important holy day or holy day festival or a festival part of the season. There's three seasons in the year. You got the spring season, the summer season, and then the fall season. And God has instructed us, three times in the year shall you appear before the Eternal. So three times in the year do we have these festival seasons. One of them, the first one, the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread, is an 8-day festival. Then there's a 1-day festival that occurs 50 days later. And then there's another 8-day festival that occurs in the 7th month of the year, exactly half a year away from the spring festival called the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, why is it that we Americans, Britons, Australians, and we Anglo-Saxons, we Christians, why don't we follow those holy days? I mean, after all, we're Christians, and we follow after Christ, and you would think that Christians would want to do what Christ did, wouldn't you? Now, Christ practiced the Passover. Christians practice Easter. And, of course, a question arises, why? What causes this confusion, or what causes this difference? The Jews practice Passover, or at least they claim to, and they reject Easter, but they reject Christ. Now, you would think that the Jews would accept Christ because he practiced the Passover, or you'd think the Christians would accept Christ because they follow Christ and that they would do the Passover because he did the Passover. Let's take a look and see if that's true. In Matthew chapter 26, if you've got a Bible, why don't you flip over to Matthew chapter 26, first book of the New Testament. About verse 17, we read this statement. Now the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus, saying to him, "Where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover?" And he said, "You go into the city to such a man and say to him, 'The Master saith, My time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples.' And the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. And when even was come, he sat down with his 12." So here we are on the Passover day. We call this the Last Supper. You know, Christians, you know, they have these pictures of Jesus sitting in the middle of this broad Last Supper table, and he's got his disciples on either side of him. He wasn't practicing Christmas. This wasn't Sunday afternoon after church, and they weren't sitting down to eat ham. They were eating Passover. They were preparing for the Passover. This was the Passover. Where will you that we prepare the Passover? I know it's kind of a shock. My question is, well, why don't you do what Jesus did, since you're followers of Jesus? And you know, he asked that same question over here in Luke 6, verse 46. Listen to this. Jesus himself was kind of perplexed by what we do today. And he said, "And why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" Why do you religious people call me Lord, but you don't do anything I tell you? You don't do anything that I do. If there's anything that Christians do that Jesus did, could you write me an email and let me know what it was? I'm not sure that I can see anything that Christians do today in the modern 21st century that Jesus did. They rejected out of hand. Now, there might be one or two things. I'd be interested in knowing what they are. I'll put it on the air if you can send me an email. What did Jesus do in the Bible that we do today? If you can name one thing, send me an email. Now, the story begins back in Exodus chapter 12. And so, if you've got a Bible, flip it back here to Exodus chapter 12. That's the second book in the Scripture. Genesis is first, Exodus is second. And here's the Passover statute. It's a pretty long one. A pretty important doctrine, a pretty important law. It's both a law and a doctrine. Doctrine is something that you practice over and over, like a ritual, like a religious doctrine, like eating bread and wine, you know, the communion. That's a doctrine. And then there are statutes. This is both a statute and a doctrine. This is something that you do over and over again, year after year after year. And it's also a statute because three times in this chapter, God has instructed us that we're to do this Passover forever. Forever. So if you thought this statute ended at some time in the distant past, you could put that out of your mind. That may make good church doctrine, and it may be that that's what your church teaches and so on, and heaven forbid or God forbid that I should get in the way of your church and your doctrine, but it's not scriptural and it isn't something that comes out of the Bible, which is what we're concerned with here. So if you're more concerned about church doctrine than scriptural doctrine, well then have at it. But for those of you that are interested in, well, what did the Bible teach? What did God teach? What did the statute? What did Moses tell us? Then here it is, in Exodus chapter 12, the Passover statute. He starts off and he says, "The Eternal spoke unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months, and it shall be the first month of the year to you. Verse 3. You speak unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, In the tenth day of this month they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for a house." Now, the first instruction that we get is that the first month of the year is the month in which we do the Passover. The second instruction is, on the tenth day of that month, we're to bring up a male lamb and lock it up in a pen. So there's your first two instructions. Now, there's 53 of these instructions. I list them out, and then during Passover, when people come here to watch, I hand them the list. And I say, now here's the list. Now you watch as we do the Passover here this week, and you take a pen and you check off each one of these things that we do. There's 53 things that you have to do in order to accomplish or to practice the Passover. 53 things that you got to do. And one of them is you got to bring this lamb up on the 10th day. Now, could you bring him up on the 8th day? Could you bring him up on the 11th or 12th day? Could you bring him up on the 14th day? Well, I guess you could. But I wouldn't do that. And the reason that I wouldn't is because God with specificity here said he wanted us to bring the lamb up. That is, you go out into your flock and you separate the lamb out of your flock on the 10th day. Now, if it didn't make any difference, I think he would have said, you should go out into the flock and take a male lamb of the first year. Or if it made a difference and he wanted it on the 8th day, I think he would have said, well, I want you to do it on the 8th day, 9th day, 10th, 11th, 12th. When you get down to the specificity and the guy says, do it on the 10th day, my mind says to me, he must have had a reason for telling us to do it on the 10th day rather than the 9th or 11th day. And honest to God, I don't know what the reason is. I'm just doing it on the 10th day because that was the instruction that he gave me. Honest to God, I could go out into the field and I could bring that lamb up on the 14th day in the morning. I could do it any time before that. Now, the reason I'm going to bring this to your attention is that every once in a while I get a letter. And somebody will say, well, I wanted to keep the Passover, so I went down to the butcher shop and I bought a leg of lamb and brought it home and stuck it in the oven. As you see us going through these 53 items over here, there isn't anything in here that says go down to the butcher shop and buy a leg of lamb and bring it up and stick it in the oven. And people want to know, well, is that good enough? Is that satisfactory? I guess if a person says, well, I'm going to quit keeping Easter and I'm going to do the Passover, I guess that's a step in the right direction. I had a guy one time, we were talking about adultery, and I said, adultery is a crime. You're going to have to wean yourself from going down to Flo's Whorehouse. And he thought about that a little bit, and he says, do I have to do it cold turkey, or can I just taper off? Instead of going down once a week, could I go down, say, twice a month or once a month? And I see the guy's point. I mean, you know, if you're going down and breaking this law once a week and you stop breaking the law once a week and you only break the law once a month, I guess that's a big step in the right direction. I don't think God is going to pat you on your little pointed head and say, good boy, I don't see that, but then, you know, it's better than nothing. I would say that you would be better off going to Flo's once a month rather than once a week. But the law requires that you stop doing that. So I just pass it on to you for what it's worth. And so here in verse 3, it says, on the 10th day of the month, you're to bring up a lamb out of your flock and keep it up. It says, a lamb for a house, a lamb for each family. Now, if the household is too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. So I went through that a couple of days ago. I'll do it for you once more. You know, lambs come in various sizes. A lamb of the first year could be one that's 3 months old and weighs 20 pounds. Or he could be 12 months old and he could weigh 60 pounds. Well, you're going to get about 50% meat out of an animal. They butcher out about 50%. So you got half waste and half meat. And at the Passover, you can figure about a half a pound per person. Or if you're a big eater, you might eat a whole pound per person. I like to make sure there's plenty for dinner. So I figure a pound per person. I almost invariably take a lamb that's about a year old. That's a big lamb. I get about 30 pounds of meat. That's enough to do about 20 people. Because you don't cut this lamb up into pieces, you know, chunks. You don't get a meat saw out there and break the bones and cut him open. You just cut the meat off of the front quarters, hind quarters, and backstrap. So you got quite a bit of loss in there. So I'm figuring about 20 pounds of meat off of a big lamb. Now, if there's just four of you in the family, a small lamb, you know, 20, 30 pounder will do. They'll butcher out half. You'll get 10 pounds of meat. I figure about 5 pounds of meat. That's enough to feed 5, 6, 8 people. A small lamb will do 5, 6, 8 people. But when you've got 20 or 30 people at your gathering at the Passover, you should figure on a big lamb. All right, so verse 4 then, you take a look, and if you're just a single guy, you probably want to throw in with the neighbor next door and share in the expense. Now, verse 5, your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You shall take it out of the sheep or from the goats. So you can either use a sheep or a goat, but it has to be a male. So you can't use a ewe or a nanny. All right? Verse 6, you shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. Evening. Now, the word evening over here has a meaning, a definition. Evening begins at 12 noon. Evening begins at 12 noon. You kill it in the evening. Not after dark. Not after the sun goes down. Many people have misunderstood that. There's four periods of a day. You got from 12 o'clock midnight until 6 in the morning. Then you've got 6 in the morning until noon. That's called morning. From 12 o'clock noon until 12 o'clock at night is the afternoon, and then you've got evening comes in there. Now notice we're going to kill this critter in the evening. That's afternoon. Jesus died at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's when the Passover lamb dies. You eat the lamb in the evening. You eat the lamb after the sun goes down on the 15th day of the month. We'll see that as we progress along. Verse 7. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts and on the upper door post of the houses wherein they shall eat it. All right, so when you kill a lamb, you cut its throat. And then you bleed it into a big bowl. I use a big stainless steel bowl. I'd say it's probably 16, 18 inches in diameter. I stick it underneath the sheep's head. A couple guys hold it down. You cut the lamb's throat. This is not cruel and unusual. It's the normal way that we butcher sheep and goats. When you cut the jugular vein, the blood pressure drops to the brain and the animal goes unconscious. when there's a drop in blood pressure. There's pain when the knife goes in and there's a cut. The animal goes into shock. He goes unconscious. He suffers no pain or very little. It's about the simplest, fastest way that you can kill an animal is to cut its throat. Now, the blood drains into the bowl. Now, it coagulates pretty fast. Now, notice the instruction here. You're to take this blood. Now, you've got three or four households here. So you need to take a little container and then scoop the blood out of the big bowl and put it in your little container. I use these little plastic money containers. You know the container that coins come in? Like quarters, plastic containers. You get them at your coin store. And then you take a little hyssop. Now, hyssop is an herb. If you don't have any, you might want to plant a couple of three plants so that you've always got hyssop growing in your yard. And then you dip it in the blood, and then you strike it. The lintel is the upper portion. It's the portion above the door. That's called the lintel. And the side posts are the two posts on each side of the door. So there's three places around the door that this blood goes onto. Three places. Not one, not two, but three. Not four, not five. You know, it doesn't go down on the ground. It doesn't go down on the foot, you know, where you walk through the door. It's on the two side posts on the top. And if I seem to be redundant, let me point out that many people write to me and they ask these kinds of questions, and so I'm going to answer them for you right now. Notice the statute here. It says you take of the blood and you strike it on the two side posts and on the upper door post. Not on the threshold, not on the ground, and not anywhere else. And you do it wherein they shall eat it. Now, we don't eat this critter in the house. As a matter of fact, this is not a sit-down meal. But you'll find when we get through with this story here in Exodus 12, what we're going to do, we're going to eat outside, and then we're going to come into the house, and then we're not going to leave the house until 6 o'clock tomorrow morning when the sun comes up. So tuck that one away in your heart. You don't eat this animal in the house. You don't cook this animal in the house. He gets cooked outside on a barbecue pit. And then we eat him outside, and we eat him in haste. And then we dispose of all of the remains of the animal in the fire. And then when we come in about 10 o'clock, we'll come in the house and we won't go back out again. Verse 8, and they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Now eat not of it raw, nor sodden at all with water, but roasted with fire, his head with his legs, and with the pertinence thereof. Verse 9, very important. This is the way you prepare this animal. You can't break a bone, and you don't gut it. You don't cut the head off, and you don't cut the legs off. Now, normally when we butcher, we cut the legs off, cut the head off, and we eviscerate the animal. Notice here in verse 9, you don't gut this animal. Don't eviscerate it. You don't eat this critter raw. He has to be cooked. You don't boil this critter. That's sodden with water. You don't boil him. He has to be roasted with fire. His head with his legs and with the intestines thereof. All of this gets roasted on the fire. Now, I get a lot of calls on this one. A lot of people say, well, that would wreck the meat. Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever roasted a lamb in this fashion before? Because if you never have, then you're not in any position to tell us that this recipe doesn't work. Now, I'm an old-timey butcher, and when I first heard this recipe, I said, uh-oh, this doesn't sound very good to me. But I got to thinking about it, and I said, well, I've never done this before. This is what the recipe calls for. And evidently, God must have done this once or twice in the past. Moses did it a couple of times. It must work. There must be a way to do it. And there is. Now, the reason that you bring this animal up, remember, on the 10th day is that you keep the water away from this guy and the feed away from him, and 4 days later, well, it's actually three, you bring him up on the 10th, so the 11th, 12th, and 13th. So for 3 days, this animal doesn't eat, doesn't drink. Now this animal is not going to, you're not going to have a lot of water coming out of it. Even if the water does come out of him, let's suppose that he gets water, he gets feed for the 3 or 4 days that you got him up and penned up. All right, that's fine. The worst thing that'll happen is that his bladder breaks and it leaks into the fire, but it doesn't get on the rest of the meat. Because remember, this animal is turning round and round and round. And when he's up, it won't leak out. It's when he's down, that's when his intestines are aimed down, that as it's cooking, it'll pop. And the intestines, they're cooking also, and they'll pop. And there will be some leakage that drops into the fire. Don't worry about that. Just leave him down, let it leak out, and then when it leaks out, you just keep turning him. About every 15 minutes, you turn this critter on the spit. About 4 turns per hour. Over hot coals, about 16 to 18 inches off the coals, will give you plenty of heat. All right, verse 10, he says, "You shall let nothing of it remain until the morning, and that which remains of it until tomorrow you shall burn with fire." So when you get through with the meal, there's going to be the hide. And then you're going to have the rest of it, all the carcass that's left over, plus whatever meat people didn't eat that's in the pans, you take all of that. And you make a big bonfire. Now remember, you got these coals out here in the fire. Now you start putting in all this wood that you've got gathered up and saved to make a great big bonfire. And then you throw the carcass, that is the rest of the blood that you didn't use, and the carcass, and whatever meat's left over, plus the hide, everything goes into the fire, and it's burned up. And the next morning when you come out, you'll take a look, and it burns up even the bones. The bones will just be, you know, just little pieces of, you can tell that there's some bones in there, but they're white ash, and when you touch them, they just fall apart. Verse 11, he says, "And thus shall you eat it, with your loins girded, with your clothes on, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover." Note the staff in your hand. That's a stick. So we go out here and we cut some sticks, you know, off of little sapling trees, and all the men stand here. Now, this is a little tough. You got to stand here with a stick in your hand, with your plate of food, and you've got to eat this, and you eat it in haste, because this Passover meal is not a sit-down dinner that we're going to sit here for 3 hours while the waiters come and wait on us. And furthermore, we don't eat this with mint jelly. I had a guy here one time brought a bunch of mint jelly. It's to be eaten with bitter herbs, not with sweet mint jelly. So leave the mint jelly out, and let's concentrate on the bitter herbs. "For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and I will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment, because I'm the Eternal. And the blood shall be to you for a token upon your houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt." Here's the key verse, verse 14. "And this day shall be unto you for a memorial. And you shall keep it a feast to the Eternal throughout your generations. And you shall keep it a feast by an ordinance or a statute forever." Did you get that? We were instructed by Moses to keep this Passover as a memorial. What is a memorial? I hear people, you know, they'll say, "Well, you're making animal sacrifices. The Passover is not an animal sacrifice." Although, I have to concede that when this animal dies, he is sacrificing his life. But there's 13 sacrifices that are mentioned in the Bible. 13. You've got sin offerings and trespass offerings and heave offerings. This is none of the above. This is a memorial. Now, Memorial Day is the day, May 30th, that we memorialize the dead of World War I. That's the purpose for Memorial Day. We do that once a year. Some people call it Decoration Day. The 4th of July is a memorial. It is an annual event that we recognize as being Independence Day. Well, the Passover, boys and girls, is Independence Day for the Israelites. That's the day that we won our independence and we were brought out of Egypt. Passover Day. Next. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. From the first day you shall put away leavening out of your houses. For whosoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. So you put all the leavening in your house out. All the yeast that you make bread with, you take all of your bread and all the baked products that you've been buying that contain yeast, and you throw those out. Now, a lot of times people say, well, does that include baking powder and so on? We don't think so. But if it bothers you, throw that out too. You can't go wrong by going overboard, but I don't think that it includes baking powder. I don't think they had baking powder back then. They did have yeast. Yeast causes bread to rise. It's the leavening that you're to throw out. It's the yeast. So concentrate on that yeast, and I think you'll have it. Word about the midway point here, boys and girls. Let me give you a reminder, and we'll be back with more on Exodus 12, the Passover statute, right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Easter versus Passover. We're on Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12 is the statute that tells you here's what you do to keep the Passover. And I'm putting a few editorial comments in here because I get a lot of requests from people and a lot of comments from people, and they want to know, well, how do you do the Passover, and do I have to do this, or should I do that, or what do I do here or there? And so I'm going to answer all those questions all in one fell swoop. This leavening, these days of unleavened bread, there's 7 days in the year that begins with the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st. Those are the 7 days of unleavened bread. The 14th day, the Passover day itself, is not a day of unleavened bread. And on the 14th day, we eat leavened bread. But beginning with sundown, with that Passover meal, you see, you kill the Passover at 3 in the afternoon on the 14th. You cook him until 8 o'clock. The sun goes down about 8:10. You take him off the spit about 8 o'clock. By about 8:15 or 20, you're eating after the sun goes down with unleavened bread. So the lamb, the Passover lamb, is eaten with unleavened bread. But the Last Supper, which is done on the previous evening at the close of the 13th day of the month when the sun goes down, begins the 14th. So the Last Supper is done with leavened bread, not unleavened. Verse 17, you shall observe the... Now, verse 16, it shall be the first day, the 15th, there shall be a holy convocation. That's when you should be going to church. And in the seventh day, there shall be a holy convocation to you. No manner of work shall be done in them, save that which every man must eat, that only may be done of you. So on these holy days, not the weekly Sabbath, but on these holy days, you can cook. Now, you know how you prepare, you know, for Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter, you know, you're making these big meals for all the family. Well, that's where this idea came from. It comes from these festivals. Except that we changed the festivals from the Passover to Easter, and from the Feast of Tabernacles to Christmas and Thanksgiving. And so we're making our festivals on our holy days that God, remember, said that he hated. He didn't like them at all. We thought we'd be a little smart here and probably improve upon God's handiwork. He didn't care much for the idea. Verse 17, you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for in this selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall you observe this day in your generations by a statute forever. And in verse 24, and you shall observe this thing for an ordinance to you and to your sons forever. Now listen to this. Three times in this chapter, you're told to do this forever. How long is forever? Do you know? Is it 5 years? 10 years? 20 years? 200 years? 2,000 years? 200,000 years? 2 million years? 2 billion years? 2 trillion years? Can you figure out how long is forever? Now, if he wanted us to do this for 2,211 years, he would have said, I want you to do this for 2,211 years. I don't think that you can get more all-encompassing or more specific. And I don't think that you can emphasize this point any more poignantly than God did in Exodus 12, when three times in verse 14, 17, and 24, he tells you three times that you're to do this forever. Now, of course, if you think it was nailed to the cross with Jesus, that's your choice in life. When you come up in the resurrection and you come up in the judgment and God asks you about it, make sure you tell him, hey, I thought this thing was done away with Jesus. Now, Jesus didn't think so, and he said that much. In Matthew 5:17 through 20, he said, think not that I've come to abolish the law. I didn't come here to abolish the law. I came here to fulfill it. And he said, not one jot or tittle, not a dotted I or a cross T is going to be anyway, in any way, removed from the law until it's all fulfilled. Which means forever. Now, like I said, I can't get any more specific than forever. And then from where I'm sitting over here in Isabella, Missouri, I don't know how long forever is, but I do know this. It taint up yet. I don't know how long it is, but I know that it isn't up yet. Now in verse 18 he says, now in the first month, on the 14th day of the month at even, You shall eat unleavened bread until the one and twentieth day of the month at even. 7 days shall there be no leaven found in your houses. 7 days. Sometimes people will say to me, well, could I take the leaven out of my house, tie it on a rope, and then put it over the back fence so that it's on the neighbor's property, and then come back and take it down after this period is over? Well, boys and girls, I wouldn't do that. I don't think that you can take the leavening, which is a type of sin, and take your sins and throw them over to your neighbors and then come back and pick up your sin a week later. I don't think that's going to cut the mustard. I don't think that's going to hack it. If that's what you want to do, get after it. But for my part, leavening doesn't cost very much. And I think that I can just destroy it, throw it out. I mean, if you're afraid that it's going to get wasted, why don't you go take it to some of your Christian neighbors? They'll love you for it. Go over and give it to your Christians, because they don't care. And then they'll take it, and the law then requires of them that they put it out, and if they don't, let the sin be on them. But I wouldn't come take it back from them. I wouldn't take it over to Mary's house and say, here, Mary, hold this for me. I'll be back to get it from you in a week. I don't think I'd do that. I think for a couple of bucks, I'd go down to the store and buy some more yeast. Verse 20, you shall eat nothing leavened. In all of your habitation shall you eat unleavened bread. So during these 7 days, you got to stay out of Winchell's donuts. You got to lay off of the Wonder Bread that builds strong bodies 12 ways. You stay off of all yeast products for a week. It isn't going to harm you any. In fact, it'll probably do you some good. You've probably heard of yeast infection. Wouldn't be a bit surprised to learn that the purpose for the days of unleavened bread is to bring your body back into balance so that your body can get ahead of your yeast infection. Verse 21, Moses called for all the elders of Israel, and he said to them, you draw out and take you a lamb according to your families and kill the Passover. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that's in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two side posts with the blood that's in the basin, and none of you shall go out of the door of his house until the morning. Okay, now, what happens here is that we kill the lamb at 3, dress it and prepare it, put it on the spit by about 4, cook it for 4 hours until about 8, take it off the spit about 8, 10, or 15 when the sun goes down, when we see the sun hit the horizon, and it drops out of sight, then we start eating. We get through eating about 8:30, 8:45. It's dark by now, and I usually get a couple of cars out there, so I got car lights that's over there at the boathouse. And then we gather up all of the scraps, the blood, and all of the carcass and the hide, and we throw it into the big bonfire. We start a big bonfire out there. And then we'll sit there and we'll talk for a while until that bonfire is just about consumed everything. People start drifting away. And by about 10:30, everybody's gone except me and a couple other guys. And at 10:30, we all split and leave the scene. Now remember, at midnight, the death angel comes over. This is a memorial. This is what we're acting out every year, year after year. And when you do this, a good understanding of all they who do his commandments. The better you practice the law, the better your understanding becomes. Christmas teaches you nothing. The Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles teaches you the plan of God. If you want to know what's coming down and how it's coming down and why it's coming down and upon who it's coming down on, then you want to practice this law. If you don't care, don't want to know, well then, go practice Christmas, Easter, and New Year's. He goes on in verse 23, for the Eternal will pass through to smite the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood upon the lintel and on the two side posts, the Eternal will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come into your houses to smite you. And you shall observe this thing for an ordinance to you and to your sons forever. So in three places here in this chapter, he's told you, now I want you to do these things forever. So when we go into the house about 10:30, 11 o'clock, we do not come out until sunrise the next day. That's the instruction. That's what you act out every year in this memorial. Verse 25, it shall come to pass that when you become to the land which the Eternal will give you, according as he has promised, that you shall keep the service. Okay, now if you thought that this was done away with Jesus nailed to the cross, notice this, that when you come to Canada, when you come to Australia, when you come to America, years and years into the future, I want you to keep this service. And it'll come to pass that when your children shall say unto you, what mean you by this service? So when your children come up and they say, Mommy, Daddy, what is this Passover thing? What does this mean? Here's what you're to tell them. That you shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses, and the people bowed the head and worshipped. And the children of Israel went away and did as the Eternal commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they. Well, it came to pass that at midnight the Eternal smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all of his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. And he called for Moses and Aaron by night, and he said, you rise up and get you forth from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. And also take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also. And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we be all dead men. And the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading troughs being bound up in their clothes upon their shoulders. And the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses. And they spoiled the Egyptians of jewels and silver and jewels of gold and raiment. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they lent unto them such things as they required. And they spoiled the Egyptians. And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot that were men beside children. All right, let's pause right here and let's work this out. If you've got 600,000 men, well, then you got to have 600,000 women. That's 1.2 million. And it says here, plus children. So if you've got two children, then you've got 2.4 million Israelites in this troop. If there's four children in each family, average, and you've got 600,000 of these families, that's 2.4 plus 1.2, that's 3.6 million people. Now that's quite a bunch. That's about equal to the population of the United States in 1787 when our Constitution was created at the Constitutional Convention, about 3.5 million. Then they left with a mixed multitude. They went up also with them, and flocks and herds, and even very much cattle. They baked unleavened cakes of the dough, which they brought forth out of Egypt, because it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry, and neither had they prepared for themselves any victual. So they left that night. Now, let's get the time frame. The time frame is they ate the Passover at about 8 o'clock. They went into their houses, say maybe 10:30, 11 o'clock. The death angel comes over at around, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, kills a bunch of people, the firstborn in Egypt. By 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the Egyptians are urgent upon these Israelites to leave. By 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, about sunrise, the Israelites are on their way out. They are leaving on the 15th day. This is a holy day. This is the first day of unleavened bread. And they're walking out of Egypt on the first day of unleavened bread. The 15th day of the month. He goes on to say, Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. So they had completed 430 years from Abraham until this day, this year. It came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day it came to pass, that all the hosts of the Eternal went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night to be much observed unto the Eternal for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Eternal to be observed of all the children of Israel in their generations. In their generations. A generation is 40 years. Every generation should be practicing this law. Generation after generation after generation. Now we Americans don't do it, never have. The first time I saw the Passover, the observance, was in the National Geographic magazine for 1919, where a group of people, I don't know what their nationality was, but a group was practicing Passover in Syria. Not Jews. No, the Jews don't practice Passover. This was a group of people in Syria that was still practicing the Passover as recently as 1919. I started doing this about 1986. I had some students that said, hey, I think that we probably ought to practice this. If we're going to practice the law of God, we ought to practice the Passover. And I said, you know, I think you're right. We ought to do that. In fact, every law in the Bible ought to be practiced by every American, every Canadian, every Australian, every Israelite around the world, every year, without exception, without fear or favor. That was our instruction. We haven't done it, but then that's what we ought to be doing. Now the Eternal said unto Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover, there shall no stranger eat thereof. This isn't for Japanese and Chinese. This is for our people. But every man's servant that is bought for money, when you have circumcised him, then he shall eat thereof. Now, if you've got a servant, and you've got a hired man, you've got a bond servant, you've got a slave, after he has been circumcised, then he eats of it because he's a part of your household. Now, a foreigner and a hired servant shall not eat thereof. So if you've got old Bob over here hired and working for you, or if you've got some foreigner, that is somebody that's outside of the Israelite family, they don't eat the Passover. In one house shall it be eaten, and you shall not carry forth aught of the flesh abroad out of the house, neither shall you break a bone thereof. So there is no bone to be broken. You don't break this thing up. I had a student here one time, and he got kind of smart, and he broke the skull open so they could eat the brains. As if there's not enough meat on the animal, you got to break the head. Listen, the statute here says, don't you break a bone. This animal represents the Messiah. And when Jesus died, there were no bones broken. They broke the two thieves' legs on either side of him. They speared the Messiah. They did not break his bones. 47. All the congregation of Israel shall keep it. So every Israelite is ordered to keep this. And when a stranger shall sojourn with you and will keep the Passover to the Eternal, then let all of his males be circumcised, and then let him come near and keep it. And he shall be as one that is born in the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. So if you're not circumcised, you need to be circumcised before you do the Passover. Now I don't require that people be circumcised to do the Passover the first year here. I don't ask, but when we do the Passover here, we come to this scripture, this law, this statute. And then I tell people, now if you haven't been circumcised between now and next year, you need to be circumcised, or next year you can't do the Passover. We can't do it here. One law shall be to him that is homeborn and unto the stranger that sojourns among you. We got one law. And if you strangers want to practice the law of God here in Israel, all of us practice it together, Every foreigner practices the law and is treated just exactly like every homeborn. No exceptions. No discrimination here. Thus did all the children of Israel, and the Eternal commanded Moses and Aaron, and so did they, and it came to pass the selfsame day that the Eternal did bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their armies. Now this firstborn thing over here carries on to chapter 13, and every firstborn of your cattle and of your sheep has to be killed. So in chapter 13, first few verses here, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, You sanctify unto me all the firstborn, whatsoever opens the womb among the children of Israel, both of man and of beast, is mine. And Moses said unto the people, Now remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand the Eternal has brought you out from this place, and there shall be no leavened bread eaten. And this day came you out in the month of Abib. It shall be when the Eternal shall bring you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, which he swore unto your fathers to give you, a land that flows with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day shall be a feast to the Eternal. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and there shall no leavened bread be seen with you, and neither shall there be leaven seen with you in all of your quarters. We don't even want to see a package of yeast. And you shall show your son in that day, saying, This is done because of that which the Eternal did unto me when I came forth out of Egypt. And it shall be for a sign unto you upon your hand, and for a memorial between your eyes, that the Eternal, the Lord's law or the Eternal's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand has the Eternal brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in his season from year to year. So we do this from year to year. Now many people call this service here communion. They have substituted communion for the Passover. And sometimes they do it every month, or sometimes they do it every week. And it's a counterfeit of the Passover is what it is, and it's to be a memorial that's done once every year, from year to year. Now there's the ordinance of the Passover. 53 things, if you were counting, or if you want the list, write for it, and I'll send you the list. We've got it in a printed form here. Just send a stamp, self-addressed envelope. Say, hey, give me the Passover list of what I have to do, and I'll stick it in the envelope and send it back to you. All right, now next time we'll take up Easter. Now that you see what the law requires, now let's see what we actually do next time on the Law Hour and editorial review from a book called Too Long in the Sun. I'll give you more information on that book next time. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening and good night, friends.